Well, good morning. And I want to welcome you here to Life Spring Church. My name is Dorsey Atkinson. I'm the pastor here, and I'm hoping you're having a great day. And that song by Vince Gill has a special meaning to many people. It's let me read the words to you again. You may have heard it at different times in your life, but it's an older one. But because I saw Ricky Skaggs singing with him, and I didn't recognize the old Ricky compared to the new Ricky, but. Says, I know your life on earth was troubled, and only you could know the pain. You weren't afraid to face the devil. You were no stranger to the rain. Go rest high on that mountain, son. Your work on earth is done. Go to heaven a-shouting, love for the Father and the Son. Second verse says, oh, how we cried the day you left us. We gathered round your grave to grieve. I wish I could see the angels' faces when they heard your sweet voice sing. Go rest high on that mountain, son. Your work on earth is done. Go to heaven a-shouting, love for the Father and the Son. Today, I want to take just a moment as we begin this service to recognize and honor those people that men and women who have worked or been some way involved as veterans of our country and our military service. So if you are a former veteran or a vet, I guess you'd be a veteran, or currently serving, or are a family member of someone who has served in the past or present, would you please stand at this time? Let's give them a round of applause. And thank you for your service. You can be seated. Thank you for your service. And thank you for your sacrifice. And thank you for your family's sacrifice on behalf of our country and our nation. One of the things that we hear a song like that and we think about veterans and we think about what they've done and we think about how many lives were cut short during various conflicts that we've been in or wars that we've been in, all for the part of trying to serve a greater purpose, of trying to do something that they believed at that time or this time that was what was needed to be done to make a difference in this world in a positive way. And so we look at that, and as I reflect on that, there's things that come to my mind as we continue in our message series, Scared Stiff, of stuff that we're afraid of, stuff that we're scared of. Today's message title is titled Awaken. And here, we'll talk about that in just a few moments, but here is the premise of what I'm working off of today, is the fear of an unfulfilled life. Many of us in this room have that fear. We have a fear that we're just not sure that we're living a life that is very fulfilling or that is making a difference. Now, if you look up the word fulfillment, you'll find that in the dictionary it says it's a state or a process or an act or action by which situations come to a complete end. Whether untimely or not, whether they're good or bad, but they come to the end. So an unfulfilled life, the opposite of that would be, do I have a life of meaning? Many people are afraid that they don't. Has my life made a difference? Made a difference with others, made a difference in this world? Has my life or my time or my life that I have been well spent? Did God, or is God receiving a good return on his investment in giving me life and putting me in the place and the location, and in the times, and in the families, and in the situations that he is? Is God getting a good return on his investment? Do I have a life worth remembering? Here's an interesting fact. Daniel Pink, the author of the book Drive that's coming out, said this. He said, how people behave and how situations unfold at the end deeply shape how we remember them. So I'll say that again. How people behave and how situations unfold at the end deeply shape how we remember people. So here's a story. Two different individuals, two different men. Man number one grew up in a nice home, nice parents, brothers and sisters. They all loved each other. And as he grew older, went through high school, changes started happening in him. He began to be a little bit harder. Began to think that that life had treated him poorly. So he was a little bit harder, a little bit harsher. He hung around with some hooligans, if you will, and they began to do things that just weren't the right things to do, if you want to just say it the way it is. Now, I'm not saying that they were illegal, but they were certainly borderline, or maybe they weren't caught, which made them not illegal in their mind. And they did things that weren't exactly wrong, but to the law, but they were just not the right thing to do in that situation, and how they treated people and how they treated others, especially women. He was terrible with women. Terrible with others. Just was a terrible friend. And as he grew on, he went to college, he got out and got a job, and then he got the job and he was very successful because he was so focused on his job, so focused on his career, that this guy just poured everything into that. But he stepped on every person in his way. He was not a good friend. He would take advantage of you if you were one of his employees. He would take advantage of you if you were his friend. It was all about him. It's all about me, 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 is what that guy would say. It's all about me. I get mine, you get yours, you're on your own. It was all about him. And he ended up having a marriage. I don't know how he got this wife, but he got this wife. And then he just began to treat her rudely, poorly, treated her poorly in public. He had children with this wife. He treated them terrible, just awful. I mean, everything was about him. He took their inheritance. He took everything. He did. He made it hard on his kids. And as he grew on up, he grew up and he began to amass this great amount of money and things. And he ended up with a divorce. He remarried again, had another divorce, and then he ended up being alone. And at the young age of 55 years of age, something changed. And in this man's life, the something that changed, he began to soften up, if you will. He began to not be all about him, but about others. He began to be more generous. He began to be generous with what he had. He began to share what he had. He began to be a better friend. He began to talk to people and express true love and gratitude. He was thankful for the things that he'd gotten or that he had. He loved people where they were. He met them. He talked to them. He was very generous. He turned into the best friend that you could have. And over the next two and a half years, people just loved him. In the community, he was well known. In fact, one of the Christmas Eve Hallmark little movies would have had him lighting the Christmas tree in that town because everybody loved him. And just what he did in that last, from 55 to 57, 57 and a half. And before he turned 58, he died. That's man one. Man two, example number two, was a man. He grew up and he was everything you wanted to have as a child. He was the best child. He did everything right. He never was worried. You never worried about him doing anything wrong. He went through school. He was kind. He shared at an early age. He was so friendly, so outgoing. Just a smile would just make you a day to see him. And as he grew up and grew older, he got into businesses. He got involved in things. He got married. And this man got married and had children and was married 30-some years. I can't remember, 30, 35 years. And he was married and just was a great husband, sacrificed for his wife, sacrificed for his children, never complained about hurts or pains that he had. He just went on and loved others. He would give and give and give and was just so generous. Just one of the best friends that you call, one of those friends that you'd call in the middle of the night and he would come. And his family, because he was so generous and so helpful and so loving to everyone else, they understood and supported him. I mean, his children were just like, my dad is awesome. He's great. And then he turned 55. And his wife passed away. When his wife passed away, he just thought his life was made up in that. And so he began hard. He began to be hard on himself and hard on the others and blamed himself and blamed God and blamed everybody else. And he just became to be a hard man, decided, this life has done anything for me. I'm going to do it all about me now. And so he began to be a harder man. He turned into the worst scoundrel you could imagine. His children wouldn't even come around anymore because he just took advantage of them and just was abrasive to them. And his language was just, he was just a hard, hard, hard man. And this continued on for two and a half years, and at 58 he died. Now here's the question I have for you. Who Which one of those two men do you think will be remembered more favorably? The first man who lived a bad life and only had a short period of time of being good, or the man who lived a great life and only had a short time, but he was bad at the end? Who do you think will be remembered most? We got a second one? All in favor of the first one, raise your hand. All in favor of the second? And that's about the right. Because what we found is that people are willing to override a relatively long period of one kind of behavior with a relatively short period of another kind of behavior just because it occurred at the end of life. What happens at the end of a person's life largely affects how people remember that person. So when we talk about this, we talk about how do we overcome the fear of an unfulfilled life, I want to talk to you about a character in the Bible. This guy, the first portion of his life, was a very religious person. Everything there was to be that you could do in religion. He was the preacher of all preachers, the priest of all priests, the deacon of all deacons. There wasn't anybody any better than him. He knew the laws. He knew the regulation. He knew everything about religion. Could read the Bible to you from his memory, backwards and frontwards, and he could call out anybody. He could find the verse in his head, quote everything. He could quote all the rules and regulations of the church. And he loved the church. I mean, he loved God, and he poured himself into this. But then this movement of Jesus Christ called Christians came along. And this man who was formerly, his name was Saul, began to persecute these people called Christians. These people that began to say, Christ in me can make the difference. Jesus in me can make the difference. He says, no, Jesus is in the temple. Jesus is at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. That's the only thing. Or God is only available on those days of the week, Sunday or whatever day the Sabbath was. But this new movement of love others as yourself, love your neighbors yourself, interpreting the scriptures that he had learned and memorized, frustrated him. Frustrating to the point he began to persecute and grab up those Christians and go house to house and put them in jail. Separate mamas and daughters and fathers and sons and husbands and wife and put them in jail. Put tremendous strain on them financially, economically, even to the point of some of them being murdered. And then he has this encounter with God. Now, when I say he had an encounter with God, it's really an encounter with Jesus, who was God. Christ in me, God in me. So God, this divine presence, this Saul had an encounter with him. And during that encounter, the words were said to him something along the line of, why, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Because what you do to these, you're doing to me. Yes, I am the Messiah. I am the Christ. I am the one. But what you do to others and how you treat others and how you've been treating others, you're doing to me. And Saul began to change. And he changed the latter part of his life. Now, just to let you know, you don't know many stories about this character named Saul because there's not many written about him in the Bible. In fact, if you go to the New Testament and you hold up the New Testament, how many ever thick it is? Almost two-thirds of the New Testament of the Bible was written not by the first person, Saul, but about the new person who he became, was Paul, and talking about how to live as a Christian. And so he began to teach this, and he began to talk to people. And here is a passage that he wrote one time. Here's a piece of scripture that sort of, to me, helps me understand. If I feel like I'm living an unfulfilled life, if I'm not sure I'm living into the purpose that God has for me, that this passage here helps me to see some truths that would help me. Because Paul's writing it with his own hands. And here's what he says to a group of people who lived in a town called Corinth. So those people that he wrote to would be Corinthians. And this is what it says. And so it was with me, brothers and sisters. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or with human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness and with great fear and trembling. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but they were with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. See, here's one of the first ways that we battle this part about, am I having, or do I live, or am I feeling like I have a fulfilled life? If my fear is not living a fulfilled life, then here's one of the things to battle that. The first thing we need to know, it's not about what you have, what you don't have. It's about what you do have. It's not about being eloquent or having a lot of wisdom. It's not about your weaknesses or your fears. It's not about wise or persuasive words, is what Paul was saying. It is about a couple of things. It is about going to others. He said, brothers and sisters, I come to you. It's about going to them. It is about proclaiming to others the testimony, your witness, your understanding of what God is to you and what He's done for you. It is about that. It is about staying focused on Jesus. It is about staying resolved. Resolve means I'm holding on to it. I'm not letting go. I'm committed to it. It is about overcoming our fears. And even when those fears make us tremble in our boots, it's about demonstrating God's power, the Spirit's power. So how do we overcome fear of an unfulfilled life? First of all, verse 3 tells us, it's all about Jesus. It's not about you, it's about Jesus. It's about what Jesus has done to you, what He's done through you, what He continues doing with you, and the person that you're becoming because of Jesus. It's about maximizing what we do have. You may not have much money, much resources, much intelligence. You may not have much of anything, but what you have is enough for God to use to make a difference. That's what it is to have a fulfilled life. Many of us in this room are continuing to look for something we don't have that we think we need to be able to do what God's calling us to do. And I'm telling you, where you are right now, you have what it takes to have a fulfilled life right where you are with what you have each day you're with Jesus. Each day that you trust Him. Because that phrase that we said last week that is the summary of the whole Bible is Christ in you, Jesus in you, Jesus in me. It's not about our past. It's about what we do now. Many of us in this room were hung up on who we used to be, what we used to do, and how we used to do it, how we used to say it. We're hung up on all that. Paul had to get by that. He persecuted the church. He lined up people to be killed because they were believers. You don't get much worse than that. And God used him and changed him, and he became a different person. It's not about your past, and you're going to have to let go of your past. You're going to have to let go of your past failures, your past trials, your past scars. You've got scars to remind you about the past, but don't keep picking them open to go back to the past. It's about what you do now and about what you have now. It's about having a focus, being resolved and focused on, it's not about me, it's about helping others grow in their faith. I make these sacrifices not to get in good with God, not to get in on His better side, not to let Marcus or other people who are friends of mine think I'm a better person than I am. It is all about God. It is about others. It's about helping them to grow in their faith. And so I thought about how I could drive this home with you. So I got your life here. This is your life. Timeline, if you will, whatever. Does anybody know what this is? I'll show you. It's one of those. You know what this is? I ain't going to tell you what number it is on there. You understand? I did that, you know. It's 32 on the end seam, but I ain't going any further than telling you what that is. So this is your life. Right here. That's all you got. So my question is, how long do you plan on living? How long do you want to live? For some of you, you're probably sitting here thinking to yourself, well, I've already lived longer than what I thought I would live compared on what I was doing. Some of us are sitting there thinking, I'm lucky to even be here today, preacher. If you know, I didn't have much of that. I'm just happy to have what I got now. Others in here are going, oh, I got a whole lifetime. So I'm just going to use me as an example, if you will. Can I use me as an example? Because I don't want to call out anybody. My plan, what I would like, what I'm striving for, be honest with you, I want to make 97. I want to hit 97. Got it? Now you can say, why didn't you hit 107? Well, listen, if I get to 97, then I'm going to ask for 3 more years. I'm going to try to get those. But I got to get those first 97. You know? So here's the deal. 97. So I don't need this part here. Because that part there, 98, 99, 100, up to 130. But I ain't going to live that. So I don't need that. Now here's the issue. That's my life. That's what it is, 97. But here's the issue. I'm 55. Oh, crap. That right there is gone. And this is what I'm left with. This is it. 55 to 97. Now, let me tell you something. This part here mattered at one point in time, but really, does it matter? Because let me ask you. Listen, when I was in high school, Rico Suave didn't have anything on me, buddy. I was it. Yeah, I was. How y'all think I got Jody? I was all that. And potato chips and a moon pie to go with it, I'm telling you. But you know what that means to my kids? Nothing. Well, they don't remember that. They don't know that. When I was an early father, when Jody was pregnant with them babies, I was talking to her belly. I was talking to, hey, this is your daddy in there. I love you, man. We're going to have a blast when we get out of there. They don't remember that. They might know my voice a little bit, but they don't know what I said. There's times that they remember, and I talk to them now when we're sitting around the table, and they might remember one or two stories of my past, but they don't know anything about who I am. They don't know the struggles that she and I went through for 7 years as we begged God and prayed for God to give us our first child. And we 7 years, we finally got one. And then why, when we got a second and a third, we love them, whatever. There's nothing we won't do for them. They don't know that. In fact, all they're going to remember about me is how I finished this race. This right here. That's what they're going to remember. See, a fulfilled life is not about what you've done in the past. It's about what you're doing right now. And what I'm finding about a fulfilled life is it's about finishing strong. It's not important how you started the game. It's not important where you got. It's about how you finish. And the question is, are you going to finish strong? See, some of us see this and go, oh, it's game over. I'm sitting here going, it's game on. I got this day. I got this life. It's game on. This is what I'm going to do. And let me tell you, some of you young people, I'm just going to tell you this. It's going to hurt your feelings. They think you got that much time left. Because the other week, I seen some go that early. And that's all they's guaranteed. Take those glasses off, you'll be able to see better. See, because you ain't guaranteed anything. I'm not guaranteed anything. So whether you got this much, you got this much, or you've got this much, doesn't matter to me what you have. Question becomes is what are you going to do with it? See, some of us in this room are just like, it's game over. There's nothing I can do. I'm too old for God to work. I'm too old for God to do something with me. See, I told you that how to overcome the fear of unfulfilled life is about Jesus, first of all. It's about Jesus and our relationship about Jesus. It's about trying to grow and know more about Jesus. It's about how we maximize what we do have. I don't have everything, but whatever you do have, whether it's this amount or this amount, whatever you do have, are you maximizing what you have? It's not about your past. It's not about what's been behind you. It's gone. It's in behind you. It's about what you do right now, what you do today, not next week. It's what you do today. And it's focus on growing others and helping their faith to grow strong. Because remember we said what happens at the end of a person's life largely affects how people remember that person's life. Now here's another thing I found out. As we get older, and I'm getting older, As we age with time, we realize it becomes increasingly important to make the right choices and not waste time on gradually diminishing future payouts or payoffs. In other words, let me tell you this. This is what statistics show. Statistics shows as you get older, you will have less and less friends. But the friends you do have will be very, very close to you. When you're early on in your life, you have a bunch. It's acquaintances. You have people around you. But as you get older, as you get into these latter things, what you do is you realize, I am not investing my time in things that don't give a return. You start to weed out those negative people in your lives. If you're over 55, you get an amen to that one. Amen. You start to weed out those things that's just bringing you down and making your what time you've got left on earth suck. And you start to work in and have people in there that pour into you and fulfill you and help you grow and help you accomplish what you've resolved to do. I want to make a difference in this life. I want to be remembered for something more than what I was in high school or whatever. I want to be known that I finished the race strong. As we get older, it becomes increasingly important to make the right choices and not waste times on the past. So, what does that look like? We have a friend of ours from this congregation that passed away a couple of weeks ago. Her name was Barbara Thornburg. Barbara Thornburg was born on October 27th, 1938. She lived to be 1 week short of being 78 years old. So she was 77 years old and 51 weeks when she passed away. Now, she was born down in Calhoun County, down in Alabama. She married a man named Erskine Thornburg. Married to him for 41 years. Had three children and five grandchildren. Used to sit right back there where Miss Sherry sits, in a wheelchair. Had what would you say was an average life, but she had some very difficult times in her life. Very difficult times in her life, just because of the time frame of when she was born. Life was tough, and she was from Alabama. That made it double tough. She grew up poor, not having much, but she did what she could for those three kids, her and her husband did. They had issues over time, they like any family does, but 41 years they stayed together. He ended up having a stroke. She worked many jobs during the time. They run a bait shop at one time. She done that. She worked in a cotton mill one time working that. She done many things over life. Her and her husband tried to do that, but her husband had a stroke at one time, and it sort of made him, what we were saying the other day, not totally paralyzed but lame, not totally dependent but a lot, making him think he wasn't the man that he was. And so she began to be a caretaker, and he passed away. Of the three children, she had another one that tragically died as well. And that's not the way it's supposed to go, because parents, we're supposed to go before our kids do. We're not supposed to bury our own children. And that's what we think, but that's not the way things go sometimes. And so she had a tough time. Barbara, her daughter Teresa, and her granddaughter Whitney moved her up here. And she moved up in this area, and she moved into the Summit, a place that many of you know in town. It's not assisted living, but it's for people who economically are challenged and live on very tight incomes. And she lived there on the first floor, Miss Sherry, her good friend on the second floor, right above her. Because of that amputation to her leg, because of diabetes, couldn't get around. Really depended on everybody around her. People depended on her to get her to the doctor, people to get her to church, people to get her wherever she went, whatever she did. And dependent on others. Several years ago, she began coming to LifeSpring. Teresa brought her. Brought her when we used to meet over at the Marriott, when we used to meet in the Southern Hospitality Comfort Center, on the days when this stage would be picked up and put down every week, picked up and put down every week, because we couldn't stay put in one place. And she came, rolled around in that wheelchair. People got to know her. 2013, we did a thing called Be the Church Day that year. day we had almost 200 people that we decided, we've done this a couple of years in a row, and we've gotten away from that, and hopefully we'll get back to this, but we got away from it. But we had decided that we were going to do a Be the Church event. Rather than go to church and do church on Sunday morning, we decided we were going to go out in the community and help people on Sunday. Everybody was worried about lightning bolts hitting us because we weren't going to do an 11 o'clock service. What do you mean we're not going to do 11 o'clock service? No, we came in work clothes. Lori smiling, she climbed up in there and helped clean out Fostering Bullock. Different people went to different places. We built ramps for people on that Sunday. We went and fed people. We done all kinds of things. We took gift baskets. The youth done stuff. We took gift baskets to the hospital, to the other people. First one we done, the first Be the Church Day we did, we fed all the police department fire people on Sunday. Just went over there and cooked out for them on a Sunday, fed them. And Barbara wanted to be a part of that and wanted to do that. But, you know, she's limited because she was in that wheelchair and couldn't do those things. And so what we did was we said, okay, Barbara, you and Sherry, y'all at registration. And so the two of them and Whitney were our registers, registrars or whatever. So we signed in and they were doing their stuff and putting the notes out there where for them to go and all that. And it was a great day. And she was a part. And over that time, you know, I kept thinking, well, it's just, they can't get the Bible study, they can't get anywhere. And I started talking to her, and I'm like, you know, Barbara, why don't we just do Bible study at your house? Well, she said, I'd love that, but it's only me, and maybe I can get Miss Sherry to come down here. And she talked to Sherry, and Sherry said, yeah, I'll come. And it was just the two of them. And then they said, Preacher, you got so much to do. I said, no, that sounds like a good thing for me. And so we began to have Bible study every Thursday. Every Thursday. Fixed on my schedule. Doing a Bible study. And we'd go over there and we'd read the Bible. We'd talk about that after I got her to turn off John Wayne or whoever was on, because it was Western time at that time when we met. And she'd cut that off and we'd sit there and we'd talk and we'd have a good time and we would just pray and we'd talk. We prayed about children. We prayed about, you know, some of the family members. They just hadn't talked in years and we prayed about that. In years we prayed and those family members resolved those issues and they got to see each other again. And it was a miracle for us. Her and Sherry invited people in that summit. They said, we just need to have more. You coming over here to do this for us, and you just need to have more people. And I said, well, invite some of the people here. You got a whole six-story building. Invite them. And they invited. And you know how many people showed up? Zero. And they never stopped inviting. Never stopped asking. Because this part of what was happening in them was just like a movement. God was doing something. She got to not thinking about all that she didn't have and began to think about what she did have. And let me tell you, she had some issues. She had some things with the phantom pain so bad. She got on the medicine that was put her in a bad place. She had to go get some help with that. And I'm talking about, listen, people, this wasn't in her 40s. This is in the 60s and 70s. That's hard. And you think God's given up on you, but she hung in there. She was resolved to live a fulfilled life. She resolved not to worry about what she didn't have, but what she did have. I think Chris has got some pictures up here. There was a day in 2013, that's Miss Barbara. This right here, these couple pictures here coming up, was right there, let's leave it there. Was it Brooklyn? We decided to have a baptism service. But we wanted people to remember their baptisms who had been baptized before. And we do that when we do that. We baptize those that have never been baptized and wanted to give their life to Christ and let this be their outward visible sign to everybody. I'm a part. Miss Barbara had been baptized before. She said, I want to remember. I said, let's do that. And that's us praying over, putting the water on her head, and remembering what God was doing through her. Now a little bit more of that story after these last couple times. You know, she helped Be the Church Day. She's doing Bible study on Sundays, a little Bible study that we're doing. She come here. She loved Lunch with LifeSpring. That's why we sort of picked this day to remember her. Lunch with LifeSpring was her favorite because she would sit here and eat and people would have to go get her food and help her out. And we just would be there and she could hear you talking. You might not ever go over there and talk to her, but she could hear you talking and could hear your conversations. You could live through that. And so We kept talking about things that we could do, and you know, y'all fill out these little cards here sometimes. You ever fill out, you know how we tell you to fill out the cards, tear them off, and put them in an offering plate? We have a group of people to pray for you. Her and Sherry and a couple of others, Miss Gloria and some others, they're our prayer team. They were praying for you. She was praying for you. Just by what you put on the card. In fact, we kept talking. I kept saying, you know, how much, what can we do with what she has left? And my whole thing was, how do I maximize what she has? I'm not asking you to do anything I haven't asked others to do. How can I help her maximize what she has? How can I help her put others first and not be all about her and the pain that she was going through? And she was going through a great deal of pain. And many of you in this room are going through heartache and pain and physical pain. But it's like, turn your focus off of yourself and resolve to make a difference in someone else's life. To make a difference so someone else can see the power of the Spirit of God being demonstrated to them. And so we gave her and Sherry and some others and Gloria little note cards. Natasha would take the time and make addresses. And then we'd say, send them an encouraging note. Well, what do you want me to put on there, preacher? I'm like, I don't know. Just tell them you're praying for them, you love them, and you care or something. And so her hand would sometimes do like this because of the medicine, and she'd write those cards. And many of us in this room have received those cards. And it's hard to read what they say, but you get the gist that somebody cared. See, I don't know about all the details. Teresa doesn't even know all the things of everything. Her own daughter and sons don't know. Her granddaughter don't know everything that happened at this point, but I can tell you this, what I do know about Barbara. With what she had, she finished strong. She finished strong. She was over at the little Eagles Landing Nursing Home over here, rehabilitation or whatever they call it. And we go in there and I'd go see her, and there's days that she couldn't talk or there's days that she could. The people at the desk say, who is this woman that all these people come to see? Miss Chris took over my Bible study for me back there, and she kept going, and they decided, well, she's in rehab. We'll just go have rehab. We go do Bible study over there. She's not moved. That was her new home. We just do Bible study there. They moved it over there. And they come and brought joy and brought hope. And Barbara lived a fulfilled life. See, what I know about Barbara is that she would want to say this to you. She'd never have the courage to come up here and say it to you from up here on the stage. But if you sit back there with her at the table, she'd tell you these words in some form or fashion. God loves you. He really don't care. And don't want to focus on everything that got you to where you are right now. But what he does want you to do, he wants you to not think about what you don't have, but think about what you do have because it came from him. And God would tell you that that son that's called Jesus, that we're coming up on a time where we worship him at Christmas, that really was his son. And though you don't have to know everything about the Bible, you don't have to know everything it is, you can study, you can read. Whatever day you have, you can read and you can pray. Keep trying to learn. Don't stop trying to learn. But take what you have and do something with it. Because there's lives that depend on that. That's what it is to live a fulfilled life. And that's what it means to finish strong. So as our musicians come forward to close us out in our last song, this is one of her songs. We tried to pick songs that she liked. We definitely got Peach Cobbler here for Lunch of Life Spring following that because she liked that. And we're also going to invite you to stay and be a part of our Lunch of Life Spring. We have food. If you didn't bring any, that's fine. We got plenty of food over there. It's here. We're just going to eat and fellowship. We're gonna think about these things. It's a memorial service, but it's really about trying to learn from this woman. Trying to learn from what it looks like from somebody who modeled what it was like to have a fulfilled life. Because it's not about what she did in those first 70-some years. It's about what she'd done in those last couple.
And the same's going to be true about you. And today I just want to awaken you to that truth. We want you to finish strong. We want you to finish strong. Let us pray. Father God, as we close out with this last song and we sing this song, our minds and our hearts are in many places, but maybe at this moment we can just rein them in and resolve to begin to commit to you. We are going to do our best to live a life that matters. Not for us, not for what the world says, but live a life that would make a difference, that we start putting others first and go to them. We take what we have and we share it and love others where they are. We help them to take their steps of faith by demonstrating that faith in our own life, by sharing our trials and struggles. In other words, Father, we're going to turn this fourth corner, and we're going to turn this fourth corner in this track, and we're going to finish this race strong. And every day we get up, we're going to live it like it's our last, with everything that we do giving praise to you as we serve others in your Son, Jesus Christ's name.